My name is Tom Scott, chairman of the Nantucket Project with, as usual, R.P. Eddy. With us today are Don Holgate and Matt Fee from Nantucket. I'm going to introduce those guys in a moment. I'm sitting up on a ridge over the Mississippi River. I'm in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Big battle here. Some say, including Dan Honan, perhaps, as significant battle in the Civil War as Gettysburg. Yesterday, you may recall, I was in Memphis. RP and I had a conversation with Tom Shadyac. We spent a fair amount of time there. He has what is effectively a community center in downtown Memphis. And like others that we've come across on this trip, these are organizations that were doing one thing 2 months ago and something totally different now, feeding people, providing equipment, cleaning supplies, other things for the community, and there's sort of these heroic things happening. I think the other headline from me, from my point of view, is these towns that we go through, they span the spectrum politically. I mean, we absolutely see both sides of the argument from a political perspective, and yet there is a common level of frustration and fear. Because we're closing in on Louisiana. In fact, that is Louisiana across the river over there. There's more intensity towards the disease. You see a lot of face masks in this neck of the woods. You saw very few up north. And the frustration up in Minnesota, we characterize as, where our businesses are essentially destroyed and there really are no cases around here. And then when you get down here, we're afraid of the disease in a big way, and our businesses are destroyed too. And they want answers, and they're trying to sort of navigate their way through. It's a little sad, I have to tell you. It's a little bit sad to sort of go through all this and hear these thoughts. However, some of the people who we met yesterday, a lot of the people I'm meeting on this trip, there's so many heroes here. There's so many interesting, powerful people doing amazing work in their community. There was a guy, Chris, we had a photo of him yesterday, who's one of the guys who runs this community center in Memphis. And he's just out every day, literally combing his neighborhood, looking for people to help. So those kinds of things are happening. And that helps me feel good. We're on our way to New Orleans. We're going to visit other states in the South on the way back, and we'll keep you up to date as we keep going. So that's sort of the update. I got a call from Matt Fee over the last few days. He's been sort of, watching this, and he talked about could we get a conversation going with RP about some of the challenges that we face on Nantucket and some of the decisions we need to make locally. But to be clear, neither RP or I know these issues intimately, so we're coming at it a little bit blind. But to the extent that RP and this dialogue with you guys could be helpful, that's what we're here for. One of the things I would just add, and I'm sure there are others, the one thing I do know is that Nantucket has a particular challenge as it relates to timing, which is from an economic standpoint, your 2020 is upon you. And it's because it starts around, let's say, mid-May now, and it ends towards the end of the summer. And if that window is missed, then a big economic opportunity is missed. So that's this is sort of the definition of a dilemma, and important decisions need to be made. And that would be just the way I would set it up, amongst many other things. There's a whole spectrum of issues that sort of actually are relatively common as you go from place to place. But Matt and Don, it would be nice. Why don't we start with you, Matt, if you could just introduce yourself and just talk about, how long you've been on the island and what you do on the island and what you bring to this conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I'm 60 years old. I was born on the island, went away for school and traveled a little bit, but most of the time I've been here. I run Something Natural, which is a bakery and a sandwich shop. I've been doing that for almost 40 years now. And I've been on the Board of Selectmen now. This is my fourth term, I believe, with about 12 years in between. So I've been involved on the island, sort of politics and that type of thing. Never lived through or seen anything like this. Not even close.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. Dawn, you want to do the same?
Sure. My family moved to Nantucket in 1978. I was 3 years old, and I was born in Hingham, Massachusetts. We moved out first to build my grandparents' first summer house. We camped out in Cisco when there were hardly any houses there, and spent the summer building it, and then moved permanently. And I moved back to the island full-time after school in 2000. My husband is a fifth generation native and owns Holgate's Linen Laundry and runs and manages that himself. And I've been working in the real estate business for pretty much full-time since 2004. I'm in my second term on the select board, which has actually become more of my full-time job lately. And I've never seen anything like this either. And it's just been really interesting between business owner, select board member, a mother of two who are with kids homeschooling now. So it's very interesting times.
And so RP, I think you may know this, but Nantucket is it's run by a select board. There are five members, and that's sort of the superstructure of the government of Nantucket. And as chair, is the role more organizational? Is there authority that comes with being the chair?
The chair works a little bit closer with the town manager in terms of setting the agendas and so forth. The vice chair plays a pretty significant role there as well.
And then RP, so just the added layer of complication on Nantucket is, Dawn referenced it, there's one small hospital. They've done a great job so far. Like any one of these situations, opening the economy means opening the risk. It also means potentially a lot of people coming in and the hospital remaining as the hospital is. I would imagine it's improved in a variety of ways. I could never quote that, but those, that's the other factor that comes into play. And, it's a 2-hour boat ride or a 1-hour boat ride or a 15-minute plane ride. But the bottom line, because it's an island, you can't just get in the car and drive to the hospital. In the next county, there's other issues that come into play that make this particularly challenging. So, RP, I'm just curious, I think we did a decent job. I think you guys did a decent job of sort of setting up how this comes in. And I'm just curious if you just have opening thoughts or opening questions that might lead us in here.
First of all, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for taking the time to sit with us. And it's nice to see the Mississippi behind you, Tom. Your trip is very real and it matters for a lot of us who are sitting at home. So this is our little vacation. I think it's a pretty cool laboratory, if nothing else, right? And it's a lot more than that. So it's a laboratory for leadership. It sounds like the selectman process is very transparent. You published your notes last night, I think, about how your meeting went. I understand the town's very, very engaged, very aware of what's going on, unlike a lot of other places. People have really very real equities that become extremely pointed during this 3-month season on all sides of the equation. Don, you're in real estate, and Matthew, you're in retail, right? So you guys are right at the pointy edge of what those 3 months looks like and what the economy looks like. You're seeing it, you're living it, and you're seeing it. And I'm interested in what the management, what the leadership challenge is like for you right now, right? Like, I think you can, in a lot of places in the country, there's obviously a huge amount of venom and toxicity and a lot of division, but there's maybe less of a sense of we're in this together, we're on this island together. In Nantucket, you probably still have those divisions, but you guys are on an island together. So you, at least historically, have tried to figure out how to work through those divisions. It must be a fascinating leadership challenge. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how that is, how transparency and other centeredness and competencies coming into play for your leadership. And, if it's working, if you feel like you guys are able to be good leaders, are there good followers? How's that dynamic working out?
Well, I'll unmute. We're fortunate, as you said, because we're on an island, and I think people have pretty much followed the orders at the beginning. I think it's gotten tougher. The longer we've gone, the more difficult it has become. I think in a way we were really fortunate that we were sort of took it as seriously did. We followed the hospital and we sort of limited travel to the island, and we really, there were a few cases early on and they disappeared more or less. It was still there probably, but it wasn't, as, so the worry that we have and the split that's happening now is people who are concerned that it's going to reappear and that it's going to reappear strongly because we really probably have, you know, no one's tested, so we don't know how much immunity there is and what will that impact be. You know, most of our discussions have been political and have centered around, you know, sort of opening, and we haven't had a lot of discussions about public health or, you know, and that type of information to make our decisions. So as leaders, that's been, for me, I'll speak personally, that's been difficult. You know, I feel like we're, you know, we're trying to do the right thing, but how do you know what the right thing is? How do you get sort of agreement and get everyone on the same page? And how do you assess the risk? Nantucket, you know, has, you know, we have some advantages because we're this one island and one hospital and, you know, sort of one government, and we could test and trace and do a lot of things really well if we wanted to, but we also have some challenges. And I think that's, you know, so we've got some advantages and some challenges that we're still sorting through.
I should have probably mentioned right at the beginning, like, though Nantucket is, you know, relatively small compared to some of the countries I'm going to mention, you did a uniquely extraordinary job in reducing, you didn't flatten the curve, you ended the disease on your island. And that's a big deal, right? So Singapore, which I often think of as perhaps the highest form of organized science-based government in the world, an extraordinary example of efficient government. Now, there's all sorts of challenges about freedom and democracy, but you want really extraordinary bureaucrats in the best sense of the word that run a place like a Swiss watch in Singapore, you know that. And they did a pretty good job dealing with the virus at the beginning, but then it came back. And the fact that you were able to get rid of the virus and keep it gone, that might be unique. You know, it's you beat the BVIs, you beat Barbados. The UAE is sort of similar. They're surrounded by a desert. It's not water, but, you know, they're pretty much air bridge in only. They've done well, but not as well as you. So you should take some solace in whatever you did before worked. And then you have this question of, look, we're trying to be, it sounds to me like we have a highly transparent process. We have highly competent people that are highly passionate and care. We probably have a lot more that brings us together than separates us, but we're having some divisions now. And a lot of it seems to be, at least from what you were just saying, Matt, around answerable questions and some unanswerable questions, right? So known unknowns, right? Like, how do we assess the risk, you said? How will the virus reemerge? Because it will. It's going to everywhere. And I think we've accepted as a nation, as a world, that we have to accept a certain amount of risk for reopening. And how much immunity is conferred to the populace already? There's a couple of questions you mentioned. There's answers to all those things that, you know, so a lot of the fog and uncertainty that surrounds this can be answered. At least some of those questions you can have answers to, and that might make your decision-making process easier.
A lot of the challenge that we've been having is one meeting like this, not being able to get in the same room together, and having information sort of fast enough to make decisions as well. And so, you know, significant amount of guessing on what could happen, what's going to happen. And I mean, I think that we, for all of the businesses on the island, they're just really waiting with bated breath to see what Governor Baker is going to do. And that's a bit of what we've been, the boat we've been in as well, waiting for this May 18th date, which is literally right before Memorial Day weekend, which is the, you know, even beyond the wine festival that would have been this weekend, is usually a huge, huge kickoff for the Nantucket season. And, you know, if we have any additional things that we'll need to do locally to really not necessarily eliminate the illness, but to keep significant illness at bay.
My strong belief is Massachusetts will be open for business to some extent, and they'll give you the chance to be open, and then it'll be up to you to how to refine that, to, you know, to put contours on that to make it fit Nantucket. And again, you have a unique situation by virtue of the really good work you've done already. And you might be able to not only make it work in Nantucket, but you then could create, you know, the Nantucket model that a bunch of other jurisdictions think about. I'm talking to some resort towns in the Rockies that are not dissimilar to you, except they're not islands, right? So they've been able to get the numbers down. They're looking forward to a bunch of tourists coming in. They don't know what to do. They're taking a high degree of kind of town autonomy versus what the state says, and considering putting in all sorts of rules. But there's a lot of lessons for all of you to think about together.
Yeah, I think we have a really good opportunity to get creative. We've started talking about if restaurants are allowed to reopen in some form this summer, closing down streets, something we've never done before. I mean, there could be some really interesting practices that we could try out this summer, where we will probably, no matter what, see a drastic decrease in what our normal occupancy levels are on the island. And maybe some of these things can last into the future.
And that's the kind of creative thinking that I think we need to do. We're not prepared, I believe, to even consider that, because I think we feel like we've licked it. I think we feel like, you know, this thing, you know, we've licked it, and, you know, and travel will not be an issue, and we're ready to go for the summer. I mean, I think that's kind of, I would say, 3/4 of the island's mindset right now. So some of that would have to shift to be able to do the planning you're discussing.
I think what's important, and part of what's missing in the national debate, is framing those two points of view as much closer than people inherently think they are. Like, those are not far apart, right? Like, you did lick it. You did a kind of internationally extraordinary job of getting down to zero cases. You're going to bring people on the island. It's a fact. You're not going to shut the island down. I don't know who, that's not going to happen. You're going to bring people on the island. Some of them are going to be carriers of the disease. These are facts. You're not going to have, unfortunately, the magical testing capacity is not going to be available at the ferry or at the airplane terminal. It's not there yet. It's certainly not going to be there in the next month or two, where you can in 30 seconds test somebody and say, oh, sorry, you can't come on board. You have active disease right now. It's not going to happen. So you're going to have people with the disease enter the island, just like everywhere else in the world, people are moving around. And then the question is, how do you make sure that doesn't lead to ICU admissions, major hospital admissions, or death? And the answer gets down to a lot of the things you've already mentioned, right? So, like, what are the social engineering things, the creative solutions you can build about not using a restaurant, but using outdoor space, keeping people 6 feet away from each other? It's a lot, you know, how do you do tracing? You're on a small island. Tracing should be faster and easier. And I would really think a lot about, and there's lots of creative solutions. And you can learn from all the other nations and all their experiments they've gone through. And how do you protect the vulnerable population? You only have one hospital on the island, is that right?
That's correct. But what we normally do here, and that was part of the concern, was when people are significantly ill, they get a helicopter ride to Boston, to some of the best hospitals in the world. And there was concern that if Boston was overrun like New York City was, that they wouldn't have capacity to accept anyone from here. And that's now not a concern.
Right.
Be that sick that they would have to get med-flighted, but the option is there now.
Yeah, Matt, you mentioned earlier about what percentage of your population has immunity. You can do these serological tests to find out if the tests are accurate. Some are and some aren't, although they're getting much more accurate very fast, the ones that are available. I wouldn't anticipate that a large number of your population, large percentage of your population has conferred immunity, but that doesn't mean you still can't do things safely, right? So Czech Republic flattened the curve without a tremendous number of movement restrictions. They had good smart ones, but by really highly enforced mask wearing. So if two people wear competent masks, you reduce the likelihood of transmission by 500%, like humongously. There's a number of things that are proven across other countries to really work, but it all gets down to compliance. And one thing, when I think of Nantucket, I mean, it's not a big spot. you know, and you've got 30 tracers already. Perhaps you can recruit other people that are, you know, New York City obviously had the NYPD enforcing behaviors initially that turned out to be a problem. Now they're moving to ambassadors, you know, so like social distancing ambassadors. But there's a whole litany of creative ideas that if you wanted to spend some more time thinking about it, I'd be happy to talk to a bunch of our experts and look across different nations as the things you might want to learn from, things to do, things not to do. But testing, I don't know. That's what the conversation began on. You're not going to have a capacity to test people before they get in the island. That's going to give you any confidence. And during this season, I don't think. Tracing, super critical. I wonder if you could mandate the use of different tracing apps. Like if you want to come on our island, here's the Apple Google app, which is done with extraordinary civil liberty protections built into it, which is probably why it's not going to be that effective in the US writ large, because people just aren't going to, you know, people aren't going to opt into it, and thereby it's not going to be that useful. But if you were to mandate, this is just an example, I haven't really thought it through, but if you were to mandate, if you want to come onto our island, fill out this survey, here's a series of questions you need to do online. One thing that we're going to mandate is you use this app, and the Google Apple app might be as good as any. There's lots of documentation that's well done by Google and Apple about why it's not an invasion of your privacy to use this app. It's completely anonymized data. It's only push data, it's not pull data about who you are. Then your contact tracing would be wildly enhanced, right? So if all of a sudden you had a problem, you would know precisely where else you could potentially have those problems, et cetera. So we've talked about a few things, right? There's also protecting your vulnerable populations. And then looking in the sewage will give you, if you were to do it now, it would give you some insight perhaps on your seropositivity or conferred immunity. It wouldn't be useful later for, it wouldn't be as useful later for understanding the viral load on the island, perhaps, because you probably don't have baseline over you know, the year before. You probably weren't testing your sewage then. But that, you know, it's another, there's lots of opportunities available to you to make this work well. But it's going to come down to, as I said before, your leadership being trusted on the island, being transparent and being competent, and then having people comply with whatever rules you come up with. And compliance is a humongous issue that makes all the difference. And so if you, for example, we look at cell phone tracking data across different states down to the county and the zip code level, you can track people's movement on a year over year basis. And we then build our epidemiological curves, projecting where the disease will go. And it's kind of bad news, but our curves have been extraordinarily accurate and they've been relatively pessimistic. We do a lot of our curve conjuring based on that cell phone movement data. And the point I'm making is when people move around more than they ought to be, the disease spreads. But if you layer in masks and you layer in the protection of vulnerable populations, other things, the disease will spread less. The vulnerable populations are protected. Then if you add in good tracing, you can protect. I'm going on and on with the same ideas. There's a lot you can do.
I think we are, there's a summer resident whose son is doing some sort of app. I can't remember the name of the app right now, but describes exactly what you're talking about, which would be great. I mean, that would make it possible for people, you know, for us to trace quickly and easily, you know, if need be.
What's your best judgment of the overall sort of tenor of the island in terms of like, if there's a spectrum of like, let's get out and get back to work to let's stay inside and stay safe. Like, how do you see the island generally on that spectrum? I know that's an inexact science, but I'm just curious what you're feeling.
Yeah, I can take a guess at it, but it's inexact for sure. I would say there's sort of a third of the population feels that we should be very careful, that we, you know, that we still face a risk. I would say maybe as many as half, you know, at this current time, I think as many as half of the population wants to get back to work and believes that they're safe. And then there's, you know, and the rest are kind of in between, and it sort of runs the gamut. It's out here, it's not so much political on sort of Democrat or Republican as it might be in the rest of it. It's more based on what industry you're in and, you know, how important different aspects of it are. You know, if you're retired or, you know, you're an employee with a pension and you're home, those people are sort of pressuring us more to stay, you know, stay tight. Whereas the other people, you know, there's other people who are in need and really need to work. So we're, you know, that's the tough part, is that we're, you know, in the Board of Health and the Select Board, Board of Health really holds the power. If we were to do anything slightly different from the state, and we kind of are, we're not letting people inside take out businesses, even though the state does. So there's certain things that we're getting closer to the state on some aspects, and, you know, in other aspects, we seem to want to stay apart from the state. So it's difficult.
Obviously, it's a moment of high anxiety. Are these 3 months going to work or not? How hard will the hit be on the businesses and the renters? Because it's going to be hard for everybody. How hard will it be? How sick will your vulnerable populations get? Like, there's lots of anxiety ridden questions, but you know, you guys are unbelievably lucky, the position you're in. You have zero disease in the island. You're well led. You're well resourced. You have 3 months kind of to solve for economically, and you're really curious, and you get the benefit of looking at what the rest of the world went through for 3 months. Like, you have the chance to do a pretty extraordinary job here. It would be very different if you were fighting your own, if your curve was peaking on the island right now. Oh my God, you know, but because of the work you've done already, you've got an amazing opportunity to make it work as well as it can inside a lose-lose environment. Like, just to be fair, Tom makes this point well. This is a lose-lose environment, right? So given that we're in a pandemic, we're going to all have a cost to pay. You have the opportunity to probably come out of this better than anyone else, any place else, by virtue of the dynamics that, you know, you've discussed and that we've gone over. And I think there's some really creative opportunities available to you. And to a thing we talked about earlier, Matt, I think, you know, your ability to lead requires your ability to be transparent and to convey competence to your constituents. Modeling different opportunities, different outcomes based on different behaviors could be a tool to do that, right? So if you said, here's a model for the island if we enforce masks, if we don't. Here's a model for the island if we strongly encourage everyone to use a voluntary tracing app, if we don't. Here's a model for the island if we take these 100 multi-generational households and figure out how to protect the older people in those households or not. Here's a model for the island if we make these elder care facilities safer by the following steps or not. And those tools are available to go through that. Then you can have a very informed discussion. The footnote on that is, you know, there is, of course, still tons of informational opacity. There is no paladin, no magic ball to look into to get all the right answers. But, you know, we can get directionally accurate. And then you can make really informed and transparent policy decisions based on that.
Yeah, that to me would be amazing, because right now, at times, I think it's up to Don and I, it's up to our leadership to do some of those things. I think we present this as a false dilemma. It's either we open, you know, we sort of look at it, a lot of us on the island look at it as we're either open or we're in blind containment. We're not opened at all, you know. And so I think there's somewhere in between, and I've seen you guys talk about it being nuanced. I think we need to get to that level. And, you know, this conversation has been really helpful for me to sort of see that we need to still get there.
I think, Matt, I think false dilemma is a great phrase. And I think the other thing is there's always people on either end of the argument. So there's folks around that are going to say, I can't believe you let anyone on this island. I'm a pensioner. There's a debtor saver sensitivity triangle, right? So if you're more of a debtor, you'll be desensitized faster. If you're more of a saver, if you have more savings, if you're retired, your desensitization level will be higher, right? And we'll see this across sectors, across the country, across nations. There's someone on either end of the spectrum who's going to have a very powerful point of view. You know that, your politicians, right? For everyone else, the differences are probably not as stark as they feel. And they're certainly not as different as they feel when you look at MSNBC and Fox or whatever your equivalent is on island, right? So I think false dilemma is the right phrase. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to come up with something. You know, the different points of view are probably much closer than you think.
So just before we go, thank you all for taking the time. And I'm very respectful of the fact that you guys have a real challenge in front of you.